I am forever at home. And my job, my role in life is whoever I meet is able to come a little bit closer to home just by interacting with me. Nothing more than that, just to be at home.
Welcome to the Coaching Life podcast, where we peel back the ball crap and brush away any photoshopping to give you an unfiltered look at what it's like to live a coaching life. So today I get to talk to someone who it comes across to me, at least, as one of the coolest people I've ever met. And I don't mean cool like someone with lots of swagger and the like. I just mean this guy. Gosh, whenever I've spent time with him, he seems so chilled, grounded, someone who listens and is interested, intensely interested in people. I met him, I think in 2014 at a coach training event in the US, and really was instantly endeared to how he shows up. Like, humble, yet powerful, challenging and loving, and open-hearted. And like many coaches, he's had a previous successful career. He was vice president, I believe, of a successful industrial machining company and felt a calling to change, to get away from that company life, that there was something else, perhaps something more, but certainly something else. And I'm so glad that he did, that he followed that calling and that he's here to share with his coaching life and his story with us. So a very warm welcome to Gary Muller. Hello.
Hello, it's so great to be with you and see you after a long period of not seeing each other, and just having spent time together was phenomenal, and I know this time will be super special.
Yeah, thank you. I've been looking forward to this. I think it has been quite a few years, and in many respects it feels like a lifetime ago for me. There's so much that has gone on. I look back at that person, I think that when we met, so that's probably about 6 years ago, almost to the month, and I feel a lot of love and compassion for that guy, but he had a lot of stuff going on which has fallen away since, fallen away. So Gary, you ran a company for quite a long time, 20 odd years. And how about just a little bit, we just cover that first, a little bit of the backstory. What was that about, and what was that calling? What did that actually feel like to you, and what? Really, it's my standard opening question, actually, because what I'm after here, where did you come from, and what got you into the coaching profession?
Well, for me, that company was a company I started with my dad just as I was graduating high school. And it was the path of least resistance. So what I mean by that, I was very shy graduating high school. My dad had been unemployed for a year. It was the great kind of recession in 82. And he asked me, do you want to invest some of the money that you put towards university into this company? Then you can work your way through university. And I thought that was a great idea. So I worked during the summer. Then I went to university 5 years. So I'd work and then go to university. Then I would work again in the summers. It was brilliant. And then I graduated and I had an idea that Phil, sorry, I got to tell these kids to quiet down.
Okay, cool. Yeah, of course. This is like real life.
So sorry.
That's cool with me. No problem.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Okay. Photoshopping, this is what it's like.
Totally.
At 5 p.m. in my house, and you can keep this in. So what's going on over there is the kids had an exciting day of Japanese summer camp, and they're just about to take a bath Japanese style, and they're all excited. And then mommy is saying in Japanese, kids, daddy's on this call. You've got to be quiet. And they're like, I just figured if we had this the whole call, it would be crazy. But please,
no, it's cool. I'll keep this in. I'll edit out the gap. I think it's cool. So back to the company. And
so we started this company, and then during that time, I had gone to Paris, and I fell in love with Paris. And I had this idea: oh, when I graduate, I'm going to move to Paris. So basically, I worked for a couple of years to save money to move to Paris for 2 years. And I said, okay, I'm going to keep my shares in the company. Sayonara, I'm never coming back. Until roughly 2 years later, my mom calls up and says, we read your thesis regarding getting into computerized machining. Would you come back? And I said, no. And she kept doing this for like a month every day. And then finally I said, listen, I'll come back. For 6 months, 6 months became 16 years.
Wow.
Path of least resistance, gave up my dreams. That was it. It was easy. It was family. I didn't have a boss. I ran things. I created things. I was kind of like a master of my own universe. Got married to someone I probably shouldn't have, because we're better as best friends rather than wife and husband. And man, it was like, Phil, I was dying every day, a slow death.
I'm curious, it's easy to see that obviously in retrospect and in hindsight, but did you have an awareness of that? In particular, like you said, you know, gave up your dreams, but were you conscious that that was what was going on?
No, because when I came back, you know, I kind of fell in love with this woman who was gorgeous. And I just thought, man, this is okay. I could do this. This is easy. Like I can, man, for me, this is easy. I can do this. And it was really the lowest common denominator. But what I didn't realize in not following what my heart wanted, even though I didn't know what it was, and then realizing, oh my God, this isn't what I want, but then being too scared to leave just had me shrivel up and die.
Yeah, I can relate to that. That's such an important piece, really, that the simplicity of listening to one's heart, might call it that. And you know, how long are we willing to wait before we start actually really doing that?
It was quite a while. Year 2000, I went to Japan on a business trip, and I remember going into Nara, seeing this Buddha, and I wasn't into Buddhas or into anything. I was like spiritually dead. But I walk into this huge wooden temple, largest wooden temple in the world, and it's humid and hot inside, outside, and I walk inside, and there's this cool breeze. And as soon as I look up, I see this beautiful visage, and I'm like, oh my God, I want that. I'm tired of being, you know, nice when everything's going well, and then a real asshole when things aren't. I'm tired of this life. And it was really that I want that that started the unraveling of a tight, you know, some like ball of yarn around my heart to unwind it and wind it and unwind it. And it really, it was like what started me on my coaching journey was that. I want that.
Yeah. And I've shared here, like I had a moment when my first marriage broke down. When it finally broke down, 1998, so like 22 years ago now, I came out of that and just thought, what the hell happened? And that was, so there's like a moment, I can remember that, like, what the hell happened? And that was when I just started looking at, what happened? Started looking at human behavior and understanding what makes us tick, how do we experience life, all that kind of stuff. So in particular then, Gary, coaching. So, because I don't think you started coaching until quite a while after that, right? So what's the coaching story?
The coaching story is choosing to move to Japan in 2008, choosing to hire someone to take over my position and work remotely from Japan and having a ton of free time. And really, like, what am I going to do with my time? So I'm not going to get a job in a teaching school. I considered it, but when they told me the conditions and what I had to do and the hoops I had to jump through, I said, yeah, that ain't for me. So I decided to put my face on a couple of websites. That one was called mysensei.com, myteacher.com. And I put up like this thing when I was like with my Mexican friends and seemed like this party guy. And basically, I would tutor people. And it turns out that the first person that I talked to owned a family business, was a son in a family business, wanted to learn English. And suddenly, because I'm doing this inner work, teaching English became incidental, but helping this young man create a field office in California because he wanted to move there, suddenly I'm doing stuff that's a little bit more than English. And then I tutor his mom. And then, of course, we do some stuff. So I decided I'm not an English tutor. I'm an English coordinator, and I help cool people do cool stuff with English. So kind of like coaching, but in my mind, that wasn't coaching. That was just helping Japanese people do stuff. And I had these weird epiphanies. Like, I thought, these Japanese have a really good foundation, but they're just shy. So if I listen very intently and I am with them and they start feeling better, they tended to hire me because they already had a high level. And then from there, I said, well, what are you interested in? I want to go to New York City. Okay. All we're going to work on is preparing you for New York City. They loved it. So, I mean, within that, that was the first kind of idea, and it was a real predecessor to kind of what my life is now. So that's really where it came about.
I love the serendipity, if you like, and the synchronicity of all of that. Even, I guess, your original trip to Japan, it's almost as if, you know, there's that deeper yearning within you, and then the universe, spirit, perhaps, whatever name we want to use for that phenomena, responds. And gives you a nudge even to go to Japan and have you enter and see, yeah, the beautiful visage. And I guess that there was an alternative reason for you going to Japan, right? 2008.
It really, I went there because, you know, I had met my current wife and she had lived in Canada and she moved back to Japan, and we were clear, like, we were not going to do long distance. It was not working for her. And I had to make a choice. I had to make a choice of, do I stay here and then try and figure out life? Or do I dive back into my dream? I gave up my dream of Europe and Paris. So I said, I'm not giving up my dream twice. I'm going. I just said, I want that. Okay, I'm down. I'll figure it out. 2 years felt that I was there, and I just figured out things as I went along. And it was 2 years of healing, of fun, of just choosing ludicrous stuff just because I wanted it. And I was destined to take over this company. Like, I was going to invest millions of dollars or have to go in debt millions of dollars to take over this company. And I said, I ain't doing that.
Yeah. You know, you remind me of this quote, another of my favorite quotes. I think it's William H. Morrison, but I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. But if you Google the first few words of it, it would come up. The moment one commits, providence moves too. And, you reminded me of something like in the intro. I was just reflecting on, yeah, I always like to reflect, who are my guests to me? And I just remember meeting you. In 2014, and I could describe that as somebody who knew they were supported. You have that air about you, that aura about you of just knowing you are supported in life.
And I really hadn't thought of that back in 2014, but as I'm relating the story of 2008, there was a lot of surrender that I wasn't aware of, but that surrender came from the support of something greater than myself. And just knowing if I take care of this and I become the best this that I can be, the rest takes care of itself.
Yeah. And just coming back to that coaching piece as well, one of the things as well that I loved about what you've said is you are helping people. That was it, right? Mm-hmm. There was a simplicity to that, because I know a lot of coaching get caught up in, oh, what's coaching? What does that even mean? And I think you'd even said that you weren't coaching, or you weren't using the term coaching. It's like you were just simply helping people.
I was basically just hanging out and getting paid for it. I had clients like the vice president of Banana Republic, and I would go to his swanky pad in Roppongi for 3 hours, and we would talk about his business, what a drag it was working with Gap Banana Republic, how he wanted to go back to the European fashion houses, working on things, how to get things done, and then how to find some peace of mind. Like, I had these amazing clients that, and you know what's so funny is that when I was tutoring, I remember coming home, my best friend lives 8 floors above me, and I'd say, you know, I'm a lousy tutor. And he goes, why? And I said, because I see these teachers, and they've got their watches there, and they've got one student, and then the next student, and the next student, and the next student. I said, they're making a ton of money, and I'm just fooling around. And he goes, man, you're nothing like those guys. When you go to this swanky apartment, or this guy on a Saturday, Yoshiyuki, would do 2 hours, and then he'd say, I'm taking you out tonight. You're not paying anything, and would take me to all the underground clubs and this and that. Us goes, you're no tutor. And then he goes, you're a life coach. Kelvin, I am not a life coach. No. N-O.
I heard, that's funny, even that term. I get it. It can feel emotive and loaded. And I loved, one of our mutual friends, Jason Goldberg. I saw he just mentioned, I watched a video clip of his a few weeks ago, I think. And, you know, a lot of coaches can get hung up in answering that question. What do you do? And, I'd encourage people if they've got energy around that, then okay, you can make it easier by just simply focusing on, you know, what it is, who's the client you help, like who do you help, how does the world look to them, and what do you help them see differently. You don't even have to mention the C word in any of that, right? But of course, if you're at ease with it, and that's what I loved about Jason, is like when people ask him, what do you do? He says, oh, I'm a life coach. How about you? Like, because what he's doing then is he has nothing. There's no heaviness about it. And he's instantly putting the focus back on the person he's talking to. Like, yeah, I'm a life coach. How about you? I love that because, you know, the life coaching, I get asked all the time, like, what makes for an impactful coach? And I think it's presence and listening. Like, if you're present, you can't help but listen. It's kind of that easy. Really that simple.
Man, 100%. 100%.
What about you getting coach, being a coaching client? When did that start to come about?
So when I made the decision to become a coach, I came to peace with the idea of life coaching and things. And I started looking around at what I wanted to coach and whatever interested me. So I decided life coaching was the first thing that I would do. Then it was leadership development. And then it was executive coaching. And thrown in there was some mindfulness-based stress reduction work with Jon Kabat-Zinn up at Mount Madonna. So all the things that interested me, I just went. And I felt like if I wanted to be certified because I wanted the modality to be anchored, I did that. So I worked on those things before I even considered hiring a coach. And during certification, I had to hire a coach, and it wasn't, shall we say, very powerful for me anyways. Like I it was great, but it wasn't. And I kind of thought, man, I don't need this. I'm going to figure this stuff out. And I guess a lot of coaches, a lot of people do this. The first inkling of hiring a coach is when I read The Prosperous Coach. I read about, you know, Litvin and Chandler. And someone actually had told me about these guys, and I looked at them as they're telling me, and I go, wow, that guy looks slick, and that guy looks kind of like old. So I left that for a year. Until I went to Hawaii. My son was just born. You know, he was a year old, and I went to a 10-day silent meditation retreat, and I decided to stick around in Kona. And then Maurice Bassett sends some emails saying, oh, Prosperous Coach, you should get this. It's not on sale. It's not free. You should get this. So I get this. And I read this book and I go, oh my God, I've been trying to figure it out. Mindful marketing or something. This is really something for me. And I reached out to Rich, and I didn't even reach out to Chandler. And that's the reason why we met at the intensive, because someone from Rich's camp said, oh, come to this. And so I went. And then I met you, and then I was considering doing some work with Rich, but then I figured, you know, I'm going to check out the old guy.
Yeah.
And then I leave a message, and then to him and Maurice Bassett, and then within 2 hours on a Sunday, Chandler calls me. Well, he leaves me a message. Are you free tomorrow? Do you want to talk? And I spent like an hour and a half talking to Chandler, and it was like just talking to God, or talking to like Buddha. And then, you know, and I was really, and I said, you know, I'm considering doing some stuff with Rich. And Chandler's like, oh, that would be perfect. And if not, I've got this thing, ACS. And I joined ACS. And from there, I missed the first one because I had plans already, but I went to Phoenix. And then it was at that place. Like, I remember that weekend telling Chandler, will you coach me? That was my first real feeling of being coached, and it was off the charts. And then another serendipitous thing happened. You had shared your story when you were at ACS and you met Hardison. I met Hardison, and I was like, oh my God, I want that. And I remember at ACS telling everybody, I thought I was doing a good job, but I got to tell you, I'm not. And I declare in this room, I am the best man, husband, father, and coach. And I had an idea. At some point, I wanted to talk to this man, but not until I was ready, because I was sure that guy was going to tell me stuff I didn't want to hear, and mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want to hear it. So that's kind of it. But and I spent 3 years working with Chandler as my coach, and it was every 2 weeks we would meet, and it was off the charts goodness.
Yeah, so I'm curious then what, you know, let's start with the important bit, actually. I was tempted to ask you what changed, like, in the way you coached and what looked different in your business. But, of course, that's a manifestation of what was changing on the inside. So what do you think changed within you? What became different about Gary through your work with Steve Chandler?
Well, Steve Chandler, what's interesting is at first it was very tactical and technical that I wanted, you know, like what about this, or how about this conversation? What's going on? And in very short order, I just had the idea that that's not what I wanted. So I shifted and I said, Steve, can I shift how we coach? I know a lot of people come and this is how they want to be coached about how to build your business. I want that, but I want something more. My kid is 1.5 and he's driving me crazy. I want to work on that. I want to work on being a better dad. I want to work on being a better husband. So I really just, and I don't know if it was even that express that I had told him that, but I just kind of said, today I want to work on this. And it kind of just went that way. So I would say in the 3 years, I worked 10% on business stuff and 90% on me. Mm.
And then, of course, the obvious place to go next then is, well, what transpired, if you like, in your coaching business out of that?
Man, I'm amazed at how it has transformed without a lot of effort or a lot of pushing. It really came from a lot of ease and flow. It came from changing within me and then how I was within me and my kids and my wife. It changed how I was being with people, whether they were potential clients or not potential clients, or how I was in enrolling or engaging. It just changed. And the beauty of working with Steve, and I within 6 months or within a year of working with him the first year, I had a project that I wanted to work on. And that was hiring Steve Hardison. Mm-hmm. And I was clear. I said, I want to hire your coach. And Steve was just amazing. And he's like, that costs a lot of money. So we've got to work on your business. And I said, great. And I remember one time after 2 months where I had not talked about anything about business. He said, are you still wanting to hire Hardison? And I said, yeah, I made enough money for now. I put some away. Let's leave that. So what really helped my business in those years, you've been to an ACS. I went to 3. I had Chandler as my coach. How I recognized myself transformed how I recognized myself as the coach and how I related to people as a coach. And what Steve was masterful at for me was to allow me to assimilate my best way of being me to create my business.
Yeah.
It was, he is a master. And then of whatever I would bring to him, he'd say, well, what would Gary do? And then I would just come back to what Gary would do. It was just masterful. Mm-hmm. And there is a funny story that, I mean, I remember I'm saving for Hardison, and then I'm about to renew with Chandler, and then I get this email from Steve. He goes, I'm doing this thing. It's called the M6. Would you like to join? I'm asking a few coaches. You're one of them. And it's like 50K. And I was like, wow, you know that I want to, like, I called him. I said, we got to talk. And I said, what do you mean? Like, that would be money I'm sending to Hardison. He was so amazing. He spent an hour and a half with me, like via example of how to be with people. And he said, if you go to Hardison now, you're going to be all right. If you spend a year with me and 5 other of the most powerful coaches in the world, when you meet Steve, he will not know what hit him. And Phil, this is not some smarmy come on line. This is like just from someone's heart. This is what it would be like. Do you want to come on this journey? And if not, there's some other people. And I mean, in that moment, I mean, I'm in. I get to be coached by you. I get to hang out with cool coaches that I respect and admire. I get to come to another ACS. Let's go. So there's something in that, man. Okay, let's just put that there. Let's just put everything on red 21 or whatever it is, and let's just see what happens.
You know, there's something very key in what you've touched on it there, actually, which I've noticed. I guess I've probably mentioned this numerous times before, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to keep mentioning it. Biggest shift for me, perhaps, has been a focus away from me, but towards my clients. And, you know, Steve, again, is masterful at that. And that there's the deep work is kind of happening within you by the focus on generosity, on service, of being of service to our clients. And like now I notice I can get so excited. If you ask me, you know, what do I enjoy? What is it? Why am I a coach? I would be able to wax lyrical about it for hours and hours, but I probably wouldn't mention anything about me. It would be all about like what's possible for the client. That's what really excites me. And can hear in the story you're telling there, like, it's like, so Chandler is excited for you. That's really not, it can appear if you want to be cynical or skeptical, you might see that as some kind of salesy technique, but actually, you know, you can tell when somebody is genuine and where they're coming from, like, this is for you. This is just amazing for you.
Oh, fearless in the truth telling and so open to whatever my choice was. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. I learned so much. So, I mean, what Chandler modeled to me in so many facets of his way of being and how he is with people, that was everything. Everything. Yeah. And then my journey since May 29th, 2018 has been working with Steve Hardison. That was my dream that came about. And up until March 12th of this year, when COVID occurred, and then I don't leave my province of British Columbia, because if I do, I have to self-isolate for 14 days. And I told Steve I wouldn't do it. For 2 years, I had been flying every 2 weeks to see Hardison. And what was amazing was the mundane things I would bring to him. And my wife would say, yeah, I don't recognize you. Like, we would talk and she goes, yeah, you're different. You're different. Oh, you're different. Mundane. I can't explain. So what's really interesting is I talk to Steve sometimes and he goes, how are you doing since you're not seeing me? I say, I'm doing better than ever. Well, that's weird. Like, you're not flying to see me. And then he goes, I know why. And I go, why? And he goes, I know what you're doing. And I go, what am I doing? He goes, you create yourself every day. You know who you are. And you go over this. I have here 2 years of work in here and I just go over. And when life gives me something, I know where to go and I label all of my sessions. Oh, if something's happening, reported on World versus Created World, July 31st, 2018, goldmine notes.
So just for people listening, what you're referring to there, that's a journal of your sessions with Hardison.
When I sit with him, I just write. So I name them. So April 16th. So while we're talking, if there's something good, we're just talking and we're doing, but I write these notes and I make a whole thing. When I fly down to see him, I make it all about preparing. Then when I see him, we spend 2 hours and I'm knocked out after 2 hours. Then I go to a nice place, the Andaz down in Scottsdale, and I sit down, have a little appetizer. Then I go to my room and I don't even study these. I go to bed. I wake up around 3 a.m. and then I start reliving this session and I live and then I can go over them. So April 16th, no more stingify. Bring them home. Relate with who is in front of you from who you are. Oh my gosh. No more stingify. That session was about, I made this word up, stingify. If I like you, I'm not stingy, but if I'm kind of so-so with you, I stingify. I'm like, man, I just, even talking to you about it, I relived this. And from that session, I've become less stingy. I don't stingify anymore. And when I do, I come home. So this is a long-winded thing. This is the beauty. When you find that person that gets you, that their presence transforms you. Their presence transforms you. And you love being in their presence so much that you would invest a ton of money or whatever money you want to invest. It's like going to Disneyland every 2 weeks or to Hawaii every 2 weeks or to Bali every 2 weeks. It's like coming home. And if your listeners could get this, being a coach and having a coach like that, that I was going to say makes you feel, but it's they're not making you feel anything. They're getting you in touch with something that is so powerful. And Phil, the work with Chandler transformed who I was with my clients and who hired me. My work with Hardison did so, and it's just, man, universes are being created. This is the beauty of coaching.
Yeah.
And I love what you bring here. I love what you bring here. I call it the full catastrophe. There's no Photoshop. Earlier, I had to leave because my kids are kind of loud, and you met them before. And I was like, oh, maybe if they say hi to Phil, they'll be quiet. Man, it's 5 p.m. The kids know. It's like, this is our time. It's rainy. We're partying. No Photoshop. Unconditional love. That's what you're about.
Thank you. And absolutely in that the once again, I talk to other coaches, not least of all because of this podcast, but because of my boundless passion for this profession. See, that's actually nothing about me. And I think, if coaches can get past that, that's what we really mean by like just getting over yourself, getting past yourself and being in touch with what's possible. Like what's possible by being immersed in this work, both as a client and as a coach, what you are being part of. That's not about you as an individual and you need to worry about, oh, what am I bringing? Am I worth the value? What kind of fees should I charge? And all of that noise, yada, 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 yada. It's like, come on, like drop all of that crap. Just take a look. And that's where I get, you've described it so beautifully and energetically. It's not even in the words you're using. I just sense that the energy of that, like, this is magic, really. This is magic that we are participating in every day.
I really think for me, coaching is unconditional love and presence. Unconditional love and presence. You said it earlier. I love that. It is presence. I ask, sometimes I work with coaches, I say, what do you think coaching's about? And we always come back to presence. If you have presence to be with someone, to allow them to finally be okay in not being okay and create some type of space so that they can dream much like I dreamt again after years, that's everything. And what privilege as coaches that we can be with people and love them unconditionally, have permission to be in their lives, give them permission to be in our lives, ask permission to tell truths that might not be truthfully truthful, but they might be possible truths, and allow them to choose what they want to do with it and then create impossible futures. Best profession in the world. This is your calling, my calling. I stopped working in 2008 and I never stopped working in 2008. And I'm not going to work till I die, and I'm going to work every day until I die.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, let's take a different perspective. Let's move to a little bit of devil advocacy.
Yeah.
If there's somebody listening to this, hey, like come on, Gary. Like it's all right for you. You know, the greatest victim story ever told. It's all right for you, but like, so you worked hard and you built a company. So, but if there's somebody listening to this who's entertaining that whole yeah but story, yeah, it's okay for you, Gary. You'd by whatever means create a bunch of money. We're able to invest in getting coached and being coached by the ultimate coach, whatever. Can you speak to that? Like, I'm imagining that I can't remember where I've seen this quote. It's like a little prayer. It's like, Lord, I do hear that fame and fortune won't bring me happiness, but please let me find out for myself. I kind of like that. So could you just speak to that? For example, having the financial resources to invest taught you perhaps more of what money can't bring, as an example? But can you just talk to the whole piece?
Well, definitely when I was in my company, I was making oodles of money, and I could tell you that it didn't bring me happiness at all. When I sold my company, I had the intention I built an asset. I was going to buy an asset, commercial real estate, something that would provide a return. Man, I made the decision in 2010 to get married. In 2011, I got married. So at just shy of 50, I was going to start having a family. And then I start expensive coach training and my bank account is going like this. And then I get certification, leadership development, and I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to keep on. And then where's the income? Mm-hmm. So, and I knew how much runway I had. And if not, man, it was going to get very scary. So it doesn't matter what you have. And the other thing in terms of anything, once I paid for these things and once I started working with Chandler, like that came from savings. That was money going down. But after a while, there was no more of that. I needed to create. And I told myself, if I'm continuing, whatever I spend on my coaching, I'm creating. And at the point when I hired Hardison, like I wrote down here from one of Litvin's intensive, because I said I would. I wrote down earn $150,000 to hire Steve Hardison as my coach. That's what I put down. So anything that I paid to him, I created that or I co-created that. So what I would say to coaches, if you're considering going into coaching and you don't have a cushion, it makes it a little bit harder. I'm not saying it makes it impossible, but if you don't have something, the neediness or the need to make money makes it really hard, unless you're really superhuman, to be able to create. My opinion, I don't know if it's true. But yeah, I had a bit of dough, and I tell you, I was burning through that stuff super fast.
And I relate to that because my own story is, when I came across coaching as a profession for the first time, it was during some NLP training in 2004 and 2005. So 2005, I'm like, oh, great. Wow. People do this for a living. Great. And off I went and fumbled along and I was making pockets of money, making pocket money. But essentially that's when my journey as a professional coach, getting paid to coach, started 2005. I went back into corporate 2006 for another 5 years and just coached as like part time. And again, it wasn't until I came across a prosperous coach in 2013 that started to begin to make any kind of sustainable living. But I left my last corporate job on April the 15th, 2011. And the first couple of years, I didn't invest. Actually, I invested a ludicrous amount of money in some branding on the well-meaning advice of a friend, and it meant nothing. Get your website and get a logo and get a color scheme sorted out. And I spent literally thousands on that, and it made zero difference, of course, because I wasn't going out and being of service to people. So I really relate to that of, so in my mind, it was like, back into freelancing, contracting work and saving up a bunch of money. And then the reluctance to invest. And no surprise, no spoiler here. It was only when I started to invest that I started to get a return. So I think, there is a reality to this story that, sure, you can fumble along and bumble along and try and make it go. And sure, there's a lot of options to get free coaching and the like. I think it's, if you're willing to give of yourself, you can get a return on any investment you make.
For me, it's the I want that. I wanted to work with Chandler so much that I made that a top priority. I wanted to become the best man, husband, father, and coach. I made that a priority. Without the I want that, coaching is kind of, it's mediocre. It's like no one needs it. You could say you need it and then people need it, but no one needs it. No one needs a Ferrari. No one needs a 4Runner. No, man, you want that stuff. So for me, what I thought is if I want to be the best coach that I can be for the world, not in the world, but for the world, I'm going to be working with the ones that inspire me to be the best in all my life. Man, it's a no-brainer. And I don't have to say, who are you if you a coach without a coach? That's all fine. But for me, dude, the people that I have are the best clients in the world. And the only reason they are is because they want to work with me. There's not one that doesn't want to work with me, that doesn't not want to send me money. Just like I'm going to send Hardison another big chunk of money, and it's not a big deal. It's like, man, I just know when I get to travel again, Steve's not going to recognize me, and I'm not going to recognize him. And every 2 weeks, I'm going to fly down to Phoenix. We're going to do our work. I'm going to go to the Andes. I'm going to say hi to the people if they're still working there. And then I'm going to fly home. And then it's just going to continue. And this coaching life is going to continue until the day I die.
Let's just touch on, you know, again, the realism, because it's not a fairy tale at all, actually. So I'm interested in bringing this bit out. Like, what has been most challenging, most difficult for you? And indeed, like, even now, like, what's going on that you also find like is a challenge?
It's hard to answer that, because how I've been coached specifically in the last 2 years is that anything that I see is my creation, and I'm choosing my creations. And it sounds trite, and it seems whatever, and it seems easy, or it seems kind of airy-fairy. It's like, you know, I don't know if I want to say that it's easy or not easy. I'll use a phrase. It is what it is. It's a famous phrase from a couple of weeks ago. Someone said it in an interview. It is what it is. In this case, it is what it is. You know what? Today it's raining. Perfect. I get to be on you, and I'm not going to the beach with my family. That works out perfect. If it was sunny and I get to be with you, you get to see the sunshine. Perfect. So, you know, things happen. And who I am being day in and day out in my created world changes everything. So I don't know. I'm just choosing. Yeah, it's not that challenging. And when it is, guess what? I slow down. It's like, when was it? This morning. Like, my kids were out of control getting ready. And my wife's like, no, this is too much. Can you do something? So I go in with the dad voice, and I say, I'm using the dad voice now. Not angry, but I use the dad voice. And then they're like, please, mom has to get you guys going. Please, let's do this together. How can I help you? Man, I live in 1,100 square feet since the pandemic hit. You know, the first 2 months, we're not really going out. 1,100 square feet, four people, you know, that's tight. Mm-hmm. And I made a decision early on. What are we going to do? Is it going to destroy us, or is it going to bring us together? And there are moments that it gets kind of funky, and that's okay. I forgive myself for judging myself, and I come back and I teach my kids. Yeah, this is a pandemic. We're stuck here. We go a bit batshit crazy in here. Like, they know this. Let's go out in the rain a bit and jump in puddles. Let's do this. But for me, what I've created in the pandemic is a wonderland. We have done things in this pandemic that we wouldn't have done. We went and bought bikes. We go bike riding. We do stuff. We do stuff in the city that we would have never done. And for me, dude, I love being on a plane. I love flying to Hardison. I had clients I was going to be meeting in Japan. I was going to go to Hawaii. I had a lot of stuff that I loved doing. And I was like, yeah, that ain't happening. Supposed to go to Japan for a month in November. That ain't happening either. So what? It's raining today. So what? I surrender to what's happening. It's my choice. It's my choice. That's the beauty, you know, of what I spent. That's the beauty. That's coaching. No matter what happens outside of me, I choose to remain unmoved and worry-free. I am filled with joy and I delight in all of life. I am free because I am free. I serve, love, and acknowledge. No one is worthy of my anger, judgment, cynicism, or self-righteousness. No one. They're only worthy of my love. I'm dedicated to union. Because I'm free, I take empowered action and I'm fearless, bold, and courageous. I am love coming from love. I am forgiveness and understanding. I'm at liberty to be infinitely patient with myself, especially. Dude, if that's not the best investment I have ever made, that I get to come back to that day in and day out and day in and day out. I love my wife, my son, and my daughter with all my life. I lay my life down for them. And when I forget, I just go back to doing my job. I love my son, my wife, my daughter, my wife, my son. That's all that I do.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. And in a way, your response is no real surprise as such, given your time with Steve Hardison. And in the preceding episode to this one, with Steve Chandler, he talks about how he would, any problem, in quotes, that he would bring to Hardison, you know, Steve would just say, okay, what do you want to create? Given that, what do you want to create? And I noticed that within me as well, that, this is why often when I mention the word problem, I'm using quotes, because the problem is a creation. The problem is also a creation. Not that as in with a cause, but the interpretation of any circumstances as a problem is a creation within ourselves. You know, and what I'm hearing from you is having developed a habitual awareness, a habitual remembrance of us being creation in and of itself. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's when I work with my clients, this is where we get to, where we come from. And more, just the fodder of life, just that becomes the things we just play with to find a deeper meaning to what's going on. And once that self-forgiveness and self-understanding happens, they raise so high, and suddenly what they see is beyond imagine. This is the beauty of coaching.
Absolutely.
Like, it is so beautiful to me that I get to sit here on calls like this or in person or affect how people see themselves, and that allows some spark to occur for them to start creating what they're seeing in their life differently, and then actually take concrete steps to change. But they're changing inside, so as they're taking the steps, everything's unfolding. Oh my God, is that not the best? And yeah. I know you know this.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I also know that, I'll use another analogy as well, that there are some furniture that we can move around, and there's other furniture that we can only dance around, but we always have the option to dance.
Man, I love that.
So just finally then, Gary, I like to ask some of my guests this question. So if you summarized for you, what is the purpose of your coaching?
And the first answer always comes is there is none. There's no blanket purpose. And I don't say that to be funny or trite. I say it in my being, there are people that cross my path, and that intertwining allows for something to be created. So what's the purpose of my coaching? Man, it would be akin to saying, what's the purpose of my life? The purpose of my life is to fall in love with this thing in here so that I can fall in love with who's over there, that I'm able to live unencumbered, freely, as a full expression of divinity in human form, warts and all, no photoshopping. And to be that, and in being that, transforms or uplifts someone's life in every interaction that I meet and make. And in coaching with someone, it's an extended relationship over time. That's it. So there's no purpose other than that. There's no purpose other than allowing this to allow whoever I'm with to open up to life, to be / come alive. I am forever at home. And my job, my role in life is whoever I meet is able to come a little bit closer to home just by interacting with me. Nothing more than that, just to be at home. Can you imagine that if people would be at home with things they like, be at home with what they don't like, be at home with yes, no? I think transformation comes in that. Be the change you want to see in the world, like you said earlier to me, before we're on camera.
Really, I can't any add any words to that, just feeling immense love and gratitude that I'm alive on this planet at the same time as you. So,
it's so great.
Thank you very much, Gary, and thank you for, you know, sharing a little piece of your life and your coaching life with my listeners on the Coaching Life podcast.
Man, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for reaching out. How you reached out was so wonderful. We haven't seen each other for a while, and I'd love to see you. Like, that's beautiful. And I just recall the time that we spent in person and the, you know, the few times that we had talked.
Yeah.
Man, you're just love on two legs, and there's so much that you give. And then just to say, maybe there's something that Gary can share in his journey that that means a lot. That's a really high acknowledgement that I gladly receive. And if there's anything in what I say that's helpful to someone, and I love just sharing everything because words and all, that's the best, because then people can see, oh yeah. And Phil, if I did this and I make this life as a coach, believe me, anyone can do this. I'm definitely not special. It's not my years of business acumen or anything like this. All it is, yeah, I'm pretty clear. I'm not perfect, and I'm more than willing to share all of my imperfections if it's going to help you. That's it.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Wow, I'm so grateful to have been able to spend that time with Gary Marler. As we touched on in that conversation, being in pure presence is a powerful and transformative experience. I thoroughly enjoyed and have been moved just by spending that time with him. And I love what he gave an example of creativity towards the end of our conversation. He said in this pandemic, he and his family have created a wonderland. They've done things they wouldn't have done, and that's such a refreshing way to look at life. Not getting caught up in what you can't do, just being creative and looking at what you can. So what's your one thing that you're going to take away from this conversation, and how will you use that in your coaching life? I'd love to hear from you and possibly explore with you. My 6-month Coaching Life Unleashed program has only 4 openings a year. I only work with 2 coaches at a time on that 6-month program. Get in touch if you'd like more details. $1,000 or to get on the waiting list for my personalized intensive coaching and mentorship program, supporting coaches in building their prosperous coaching life. And let me ask you to do one more thing. I want to get this podcast out to as many coaches as possible. You too can play a part in that by either sharing links to episodes to your community and on social media, in email lists, or by simply recommending it to others in your conversations. And it'll make a huge difference if you take just a minute or so to leave an honest review on Apple Podcasts or indeed any other podcast platform you may be using. If you do that, please let me know, because I'd like to thank you personally. Okay, that's all for me for now. Thank you once again for listening. I wish you much love and joy.